Dudley, you talked about the pearl of great price. And
well, hold on just a second, Harriet. I want to interrupt you. But before, I had an announcement before. I got a surprise from you. See, when I was in Afghanistan, I didn't tell any of you this during my speech because I was a little bit ashamed of it, but I became a Muslim. And I have another wife, and she's here today. I brought her. I don't know. Come on out, dear. Come on out. Come on out, dear. Don't be afraid. She's a little bit shy. So I would like to present my wife, Afisa. Afisa. It's a little small for you, you know. I couldn't afford a longer one. No. I just wanted to let you know what the poor women there had to do. Try to cross the street with one of these things in Kabul, and you'll get killed, and a lot of them do. Thanks, Judith. You didn't recognize her, did you?
Oh, yeah.
thanks, Judith, yeah. You know, they're really nice, though, when they walk and the wind comes, it kind of blows the thing out. They look like birds. Can you see?
No. Afghan women don't wear glasses.
I'm sorry, Harriet. I had to throw that one in. You're looking good. Look at Harriet. Isn't she looking good? Wow.
I was thinking as you were talking, Dudley, a lot of us are our parents and mothers, and we often worry about how we pass on our values and our faith to our children. And I just wanted to ask you if you would talk a bit about, not in a braggadocio way, which I know you wouldn't, but to tell about what your children are doing, because they've done some amazing things. And I just wanted to make the comment that you have not held on to that pearl, as you were talking about, not, saved it for yourself and Mary, but have passed that gift on to the kids to be searching.
Yeah, I think my family's very similar to a lot of yours. You teach them. You know, you don't think about it, but when we were going, we went to Mass every Sunday in Bolivia after I left, and there was a Marinola who was very, very conservative in the town. They sent him after I left, and he didn't like that, you know. But the kids grew up like, as Catholics. They still consider themselves Catholics, some more than others. Like my daughter Maria is just getting married in the church, and she's getting married in April in the Catholic Church. But my other daughters, they will go to Mass when they come here to St. Anthony's. I don't know if this is what you're talking about, but they do have the pearl as far as what they do. They work with nonprofits. One of them's a teacher, and she believes in, you know, she's getting married pretty soon, too. She's going to Brazil to teach next year. She's going to be married by a congregational pastor because her fiancé, this guy got him through college. He was having some problems, and he was a mentor. She would be happy to have Roy do it. Roy, we were thinking maybe Roy and one of the women priests here might do it if we can get him here. So their idea is, and one of, they get a little Buddhism in there. It was kind of, you know, it's kind of a mixture like here. They throw a little bit. I don't know about, you know, is that what you're asking for, Harriet? But they, what I like is they have the pearl as far as sharing what they have. You know, that's what I mean. Yeah, they might not agree completely the way, you know, they don't agree at all, maybe, of what, you know, as far as religious. Some of them, you know, agree part of it. They understand part of it. But like us, there's more to it to them, you know. They believe in a higher power, let me tell you that. You know. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they do. You know, for example, Heather, who you guys met at the wedding, she does pretty well. She makes good money. She works with television and stuff. She went just going down to Guatemala with a group, I don't know if you ever heard of it, one of the, we helped start it in Bolivia, called Pro Mujer. They're all over the world now. And they work with women in childbirth and stuff like that. So she's donated money, and she's going down there, and she's on kind of like their junior board of directors. So they do get involved, you know, in the kids, which I like, you know. And they don't do it to please you. I think they do it because they believe it. Casey? He doesn't agree with me at all. I mean, you know. No, he's studying. He's studying, actually, he's studying what they call a new curriculum at the University of San Francisco, Performing Arts and Social Justice. So it's good. He loves to play the guitar, and they use the guitar in the communities, you know, to get the kids involved, stuff like that, which is good. You know, I don't know if he'll continue doing that. He said he wants to make money. Well, nothing wrong with that. I have some questions when you're through here. Where's Keith and John? I got some questions.
Here's a submitted question. Is the world divided into doers and thinkers, into Marthas and Marys, or what do you think of that?
Oh, I think thinkers are doers. I mean, you just look around this room, what you've done, what you people do, you know, on a daily basis with your families, with your neighbors. So I think a lot of it is just the opportunity. I mean, that's what I really appreciate the most for Maryknoll. Not so much the education, but the guys who went through it that I learned from and the opportunity to go where I was able to go. Because if I didn't have that, I wouldn't have been anywhere. So I know what you're trying to say. Because if you read this, a lot of dreams are in here. Did you notice that? A lot of his examples aren't from experience, but they're from dreams, you know? And he's been to a lot of countries, and he really understands the culture. But what I think he was trying to say near the end is we got to do something about that. It's not just writing about it. And if you look at where he did his writings, they were usually up in hills in Scotland or in a beautiful desert. So it's easy to see. It's easy to see God there in the universe and the mountains and stuff. It's a little more difficult when you're dealing with some kids getting blown away.
When kids have been brought up in the third world, I come out of a Baptist history, worked a lot with missionaries' kids coming back into Canada. So I ask you, did your kids ever kind of fight with, and did you fight with the American value system and all that stuff?
Yeah, definitely. It's called a counterculture shock. Yeah, I think Don worked overseas too for years, no? Didn't you? Oh, I thought you did. Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah. There is some kind of a shock, and my kids certainly do it. I mean, they still consider themselves Bolivian to this day. I mean, the only reason they really came here is because they wanted to get an education. And in a country like Bolivia, the secondary education, there's a lot of strikes. It might take you 10 years to get through college, you know? But I don't know if I answered that question. I know the feeling, you know, and I'll give you an example. The question she's asking is when you came back from a place like Bolivia or Darfur where you saw what you saw and you came back and it didn't seem to make a difference for people here. You just couldn't get back into some of the stuff we worry here. And I'll answer that. I remember the first time I came back from Bolivia, like I said, it was 5 years, and I was out in the boonies, and I got on a plane going to Miami. And the people in front of me were some ladies who had bought gems in Bolivia. They were tourists, and they were talking about their emeralds and the very precious stones they bought. And I said, geez, that's what they worry about, you know? They're just coming back. Don't they understand what's going on there? The military killing the university kids and stuff like that. So right away, your tendency is, oh, these gringos, you know. But then when you think about it again, I got home, and right away, I called, you know, a lot of my buddies that I hadn't seen, guys like Brady and stuff, you know. And I was wondering why they weren't calling me. I mean, here you are, the big missionary coming back. They don't have time, you know. Then I realized, hey, everybody has their own life. And I realized that more and more as I raised a family, these people left the seminary or left the convent or whatever, then they had work to do. I mean, they were raising their own children or they had to put food on the table like everybody else here. So, I understood that, hey, they're not all that interested in talking to you because they're so busy living their own life and trying to live it well. And so I understood more, and I know what you're saying, but I understood that you have to understand where the people are coming from here. They don't have the experiences that we were able to have. And maybe that's one of the good things of talking about it. But that doesn't mean that they're any less. If they had that, I think most people, if they had that opportunity, they're very interested in what you're doing, but they're so busy doing their own thing, you know what I mean? And so I think, I think you can talk about it, and I think that a lot of the stuff that goes on here is you know, is very, what do you call it, secularism or whatever you call it, or, you know, deals with money and stuff. But I think generally people are usually pretty good that I've met anyway, as far as the way they live their lives, like you. I mean, I base it on you. You know, what I've learned from St. Anthony's, what I learned from the people, you know, I base it on my friends. I mean, look at Tom Brady. Okay, he's got a son that's a big quarterback, but he never stops helping people. He doesn't got any money. The kid's got it. But he donates what he has, you know, to, you know. So I just look at it that way. They never had the chance to do it because they got married and because they had to make a living. I was lucky. And, you know, that doesn't make me any different at all from people who raised their family and did the best they could here. It's just that I had the opportunity, and those that have the opportunity here do that now. I mean, I see people down the homeless center serving lunch. They're here, they're there. They go to different countries, they're involved. If they have a little bit of bucks, they donate to some of the groups that are pretty good. So, yeah. I'm sorry if I rambled there. Yeah, that's a good question. What's the best way, she said, to provide help for the people in health care? I think what we did in Bolivia was good. I mean, some of these organizations are good. The smaller ones I find to be better. Primary health care. Because, see, you don't have hospitals and you don't have doctors. And many times you don't have medicine. So what you do is you train what we call community health workers to use the medicines they had. A lot of it's natural stuff. Like coca leaves, you know. They don't make cocaine out of it. They can use it for other stuff. And in Afghanistan, it was more emergency type stuff. In Darfur, it was saving lives. So you were pumping this stuff into kids, this nutritional stuff, just to save their lives. So there's different ways of doing it. As far as foreign aid goes, I don't know, you know. Afghanistan's a disaster as far as foreign aid. The money that you pay the government to do development work there. I did it. You know, I find it, if you work for a nonprofit, it works better. Most of the contracts that are done in these war-type areas like Iraq or Afghanistan or anywhere else are given to profit companies or, say, people that are making a lot of money. And these people have better engineers than we are. They probably have better people that can write projects and do budgets and do all the stuff that the government requires, all the hoops that you have to jump through. But I tell you, a lot of that money goes down a black hole, especially in a place like Afghanistan where you can't evaluate the projects you have going. In the beginning, we could. And we could get the money out to the farmers because we weren't in danger of getting it shoved. 2002 and 2003 in Afghanistan was great. Any of you could have come with me. We could have gone anywhere we wanted to and talking to the farmers, and we would have smoked some hookah with them or whatever they smoke out there, heroin or whatever it is. And they were great. They were just great, you know. But after the military got in there and they started shooting them, and boy, they defend themselves, and it was a little different. So I think foreign aid's got to, you know, I'm not talking about hundreds of dollars. I'm talking about billions of dollars. It's lost. You know, in the government, I mean, the government, Karzai owns restaurants in D.C. where I just came from. That's how they got him. He had a lot of money, and they put him in there because he's a puppet of the U.S. His brother was the head of the drug ring in Afghanistan. He just got killed, of course. He was from Kandahar. He got killed, but that's like $600 million a year of heroin going to Europe. That's a big export. And anyway, you know, all this stuff goes on, and the government tries. I'm not saying that, you know, we did a lot of good work with the U.S. government money, but a lot of it's political, you know what I mean? You know, like in Bolivia, they were trying to cut out for years the coca. And the people use it, as you saw in their traditions. It's medicinal because of cocaine. You know, that's what they were trying. And why, if the gringos stopped using the cocaine, there wouldn't be any market for it. That's the way the Bolivians thought. Anyway, they went down there, eradicated all the farmers' farms, and took all, and they tried to have them plant, what do you call it, stuff you put on food? The different spices, yeah. They tried to get them to do these Indian spices out there. Of course, they were making like 1/20th of what they could with coca. It didn't work. Anyway, now they got Evo, and he's anyway. So anyway, as far as the U.S., the aid, I think you should do it through nonprofits, established nonprofits, or even little nonprofits. Faith-based, too, is usually pretty good. But faith-based in Afghanistan is a tough ticket. You know, if you're a Christian there, you're in trouble.
Dudley, I don't know if you know about this, that Santa Barbara has funded a bank in Haiti for women.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just, Maureen is here, and we're going to plug the 6th annual Irish Night. There is a fundraiser. Everybody's going to dinner at Trinity Church, and the benefit is for women in Haiti, and it's called Francoze, to get them so that they will have some money to borrow from the bank and provide a job for them, and then they sell something and go back and get some more. So Santa Barbara has funded a Santa Barbara bank in Haiti.
That's a great project.
Oh, that's a project.
Microfinance is way to go. A lot of people are doing. I have friends who do that.
It's St. Patrick's Night. It's on Sunday, March 17th, from 5 to 7. The tickets are $40, and we all make the stew, the Irish stew. It's a lot of fun. There's flyers in the back. And Maureen Earls is here, and she's the one that started this whole thing. Yay for
all
Maureen.
Right. Yeah, those are great projects, are microfinance projects.
Hi, I'm Gloria Regan.
Hi, Gloria.
Thank you for your talk. It was great. I just wanted to mention about Whale Bridge. They're having their 6th annual interfaith home washing for the homeless on Holy Thursday. What did I say? Home washing? Foot washing.
Home auction.
Foot washing. And it's interfaith, and it's held at the Veterans Memorial Building down on Cabrillo Boulevard. And last year we served 280 people with new shoes, new socks, and we have a foot washing for those that want to have their feet washed. And then we have Doctors Without Walls comes, and they have a mobile unit, and they help people that need care for their feet or help them, give them ideas of what they can do. And then they leave with a sack lunch and a hygiene kit. And the hygiene kit has those small travel size shampoos and lotions and powder. And we're a little short on toothbrushes right now. So what I was going to just give you an idea of what it looks like. The day is 8:30 or even earlier than that, people start lining up. And at 10 o'clock, people come in, and they get breakfast. We have volunteers serve breakfast to the people, and they have fresh coffee. And then they have runners that get there's like a big stage, and we have like 300 pairs of new shoes and tennis.
Wow.
It's amazing. You should see our office. It's full of shoes.
Tremendous.
And anyway, so then after that, they can have their feet washed, and then they get the check if they want to have their feet checked. And then they can also go into Community Resource Center on the outside in the court there. And we have about 15 to 18 nonprofits there, like the Veterans Administration, Restorative Policing, CARES,
wow.
Salvation Army, and New Hope Counseling Center, and Safe Parking, and plus about 10 others. So it's a real opportunity. So what I'm asking you today is if you would like to choose to do this, if you would like to bring a pair of new shoes and socks next week, I'll have a box here. Or any
sure.
of those little travel products. So it'll go to the people on Holy Thursday that come for new shoes and socks. Thank
sure.
you so much.
That's great. Yeah, that's great. That's what we're talking about. That's sharing it. Boy. Hi.
Back to Afghanistan. Back in 2003, you're painting a nice picture of the Taliban standing there.
Well, it was destroyed, the country, but the people, we were able to access the people.
Okay, because at that time, at least my understanding is that they would not allow any music, and the women weren't allowed to go to school, the girls weren't allowed to go to school. They had public amputations. If you stole something, you got your hand cut off. This was like on a weekly basis. So it sounds like a really tough life. And so I remember hearing a lecture about that in about that time frame, of, you know, about the amputations and everything. This is as a punishment, the amputations. But I was so relieved that we went into Afghanistan only from the standpoint it helped to free the women and a lot of the children and everything else. But, of course, it sounds like it's just going back to where it was.
Yeah. But it'll never change. The women who have been freed, even though they're still running around in burqa, they know and they feel it. You know, and someday it'll come out. It really will. I think a lot of the women I work with, you can't speak to a woman who's not educated in Afghanistan. But because of my personality, I There was a family, they invited me over. They had teenage daughters. They would invite me over for lunch. They didn't have anything. But they would. I'd sit around a table, and they would all take off their burkas. And You're not supposed to do that. And I actually, way out. I mean, one time, we were like 48 hours from Kabul. I mean, you're at the end of the earth there, in this little, through terrible roads. I was in a mosque, because that's the only school they had there, and I was with a bunch of girls, a girls' school in the mosque, sitting there reading the Quran. I got a picture of it somewhere. I couldn't find it, but, you know, you couldn't even get out of Afghanistan with a picture like that. So it wasn't that I didn't understand the culture, but I understood, and they let me do it. Mm-hmm. You know, they let me do it. That was it. That was the difference. I guess they figured I was a little old, harmless person. But I know what you're saying. It wasn't that it was, in those days, it was that you could access the people that needed the help. Mm-hmm. See what I'm saying? You know, without getting shot.
No, I understand. I'm just trying to say that the culture back in that time, they were really controlled by the Taliban.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. You know, and that's one of the preoccupations, that what happens when we leave?
Yeah, well, yeah.
And Obama's
so
pulling
happens
out. That's a problem they're going to have to go through, you know. That's something that they're going to have to work out, because if the Taliban come back in, and they're big in Pakistan, that's where they have a lot of money in Pakistan, and that's where they're all lurking right there. I mean, all the work that we've done there and everything, but still the people feel the freedom, you know, in their heart. They could tell them this and tell them that, but they feel the freedom, and so eventually it's going to come out. Well, I certainly, is that it? I certainly would like to thank you all for not only inviting me, from what I learned from you every
We want to thank you, Dudley, but just one little business here. We want to thank the people that brought, the pink people that brought food today, and the white is up for next time, all right? Next time is white. And the next speaker, isn't that right? White? Yes, that's correct. And the next speaker is going to be Ernie. Ernie Tominga is right here, and he's going to be on for next week, all right? And so anybody have anything for Dudley to... any more comments about... Here we go. Okay, here you go.
I talked to you about Greg Mortensen and mm-hmm. the Central Asian Institute, and I get newsletters from them whenever they come out. And what's thrilling to me is that when they started building schools one at a time, and educating and bringing the girls in, they had a lot of trouble, but they used the elders of each individual town and the inmans. And if they got their support, they could go right ahead. And there was a lot of trouble at one time with the, it wasn't the Taliban especially, but a lot of fighting and a big upheaval in Kabul. And when they got this one particular town, they destroyed all the NGO buildings. Mm. But, and then they were headed for the school. And the elders were standing in the middle of the road and saying, this is not an NGO. This is our school. It's one that Greg had built. This, and the first students, girl students and boys, are now graduating from college and going into their professions. It gives me goosebumps. There is hope for that area.
Great. No, it's true. There is a lot of advancement. I'm not saying there isn't. There is, sure. I know this guy.
Bring it back to.
We used to play
here.
Soccer together.
Dudley and I were in Maryknoll together, and we're both Maryknoll priests who have moved on to other Maryknoll work without the authority of being a priest, which is wonderful. I was going to tell you that Dudley, from my experience and having known him since we were young folks together all the way back in college, has had gifts which are peculiar and special for him, and he has used his gifts which have enabled him to do the things that we've heard him talk about today. As a fellow Maryknoll priest, I could not have done a lot of the things which Dudley has done. I think we all have different abilities, different things we can do. But Dudley, you have never been naive. And
smart.
In some ways, I think that's one of your gifts. I would not be surprised to hear you branching out into something totally bigger and more amazing than what you've already told us about. But I'm proud to be a Marianola with you. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks. Same goes to me. Same goes. And I'll just kind of end on it. You know, you saw that picture of the when we got ordained. And I noticed sometimes, you know, with all the pedophile stuff that's going with priests and stuff like that, sometimes I think it's we kind of generalize. But I think, you know, the problems that the church is having, they deserve what they're getting, all the criticism, and maybe that's what's going to change them, hopefully, the power and the structure and all that, red shoes and all that stuff. But what they did to Roy, all that stuff. But at the same time, on the other side of the coin, and Mike could tell you that there's guys that stayed because, you know, they didn't get married. They probably could have, but they decided to stay. And I don't know about being an escalate. What do you call it, Mike? Eschatological sign or something like that? How do you say that? Sign. They told them that's what we were, no? Yeah. I didn't feel that. But, I mean, one of the guys up there, this guy Beast, that went to Mardi Gras with me, with his sister, he's been in Idian Jaya, I mean, for 35 years. I saw him for the first time in 40 years. We were ordained at the 100-year things they had in Marino. He never comes out. It takes you 2 weeks to get to his village. He works with the Asmat people, and he has for 30. That's where Rockefeller, remember the kid Rockefeller got killed, the anthropologist, 22 years old? Richard Rockefeller went out there and they ate him or something. You know, and Beast, their famous woodcut. So, you know, you just think of a guy like that. He's there, you know, he's there being a presence. You know, so some Marianolas and a lot of the priests really got, you know, like these people that are trying to get the culture. So there's a lot of people doing a lot of good. I'm sure you know that. And I think sometimes when we criticize or we think of all the pedophile stuff and the sexual stuff that's going on in the church, and I think it can get blown out because a lot of people, in their own way, have spent 40 or 50. I had a picture of these nuns we just visited 2 weeks ago in Marino. 315 years. There were six of them. Mary and me and a baby, we went to see them. They had just retired from Bolivia. One of them there was 65 years. She went there and she's 20. And she did nothing but good, you know. And she thinks like we do. Oh, she thinks exactly like me, you know. You ask Ginny, for example, you ask Ginny, what do you think of the Pope resigning? I couldn't care less, she said. And they say, the sisters think the same way. These Mary knows that. But they did it, you know. They worked there. And they still do whatever they can. So I think we ought to think of, you know, the people that still do it, and, you know, just don't generalize when we do our criticisms, you know. We can criticize ourselves, too, so. Anyway, I guess that's about it, huh? Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
Oh, wait a minute. Oh, shit. I forgot this guy. This is the Keiko in Bolivia. Remember him, Ginny? This is a traveler, so he has everything he needs in life. And this is part of the chalya that they do on Tuesday before Lent. It's their famous day. So this guy's got everything. He's got beans, he's got rice, a little alcohol here, spaghetti. I forgot about this guy. Thank you.